Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
As if an earthquake, a tsunami, and a nuclear catastrophe weren't enough, today the people of Japan also had to contend with the weather. A snowstorm blanketed Japan's devastated northeast today, and television and computer screens around the world were filled with images of Japanese rescue workers recovering the dead, wrapping their bodies in brightly colored blankets against the white snow.
Also on TV screens today, Japan's Emperor Akihito. In his first ever video address to his people, the emperor expressed his deep sorrow and urged survivors not to give up hope.
The earthquake in Tohoku is unprecedented scale, as big as magnitude 9.0. And I feel deep sorrow the people who suffer this terrible disaster. The accident at nuclear power plant causes deep worry, and I hope the efforts by staff can avert the situation getting worse.
Well, as Emperor Akihito delivered his address, white smoke and a new blaze at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant added to growing radiation fears.
That concern has not been limited to Japan. Around the world, people have been questioning the safety and future of nuclear power plants in light of the current crisis in Japan. Here in New England, two of five nuclear power plants share the same design as the Fukushima plant. Those plants are Vermont Yankee in Vernon, Vermont, and the Pilgrim nuclear plant in Plymouth, Mass.
Joining us from Vermont is the Boston Globe's environment reporter, Beth Daly. Beth, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So you're actually up in Vermont right now, which is the home of Vermont Yankee, one of the five nuclear power facilities in New England. And just today you reported that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has put a hold on Vermont Yankee's renewal for a 20-year license. Can you explain to us why that happened?
Out actually quite late last night, and the NRC issued a very brief statement that said, despite the NRC commission voting basically to allow its staff to issue a license last Thursday, they came out last night and said, look, we're too busy basically with Japan to issue the license, and we're putting a temporary hold on it. Now, taken at face value, as some people seem to take it, that's fine. It might be issued in the next week or two. However, a lot of environmentalists and political observers are really wondering if it means something bigger, that the Obama administration may do what Germany has done and put a hold on relicensing some of these facilities.
From the conversations that you've had with people in Vermont and officials in New England, Beth, I mean, do you buy that? Is the NRC really helping out Japan, or is this a moment where they're taking stock?
It's really hard to sort of decipher what's going on because things are moving so fast in Japan, politically in the U.S. The Obama administration has been a great supporter of nuclear power. President Obama has $36 billion in his budget request for taxpayer-backed loan guarantees to build new nuclear power plants because they're so expensive. And they've not backed away from that yet. However, some people are beginning to read between the lines if they're facing a lot of pressure from more anti-cautious nuclear people who say, let's look at our aging nuclear plants. A lot of our nuclear plants in New England are aging. Mm. Let's look at them a little bit more closely for safety issues before we grant them 20-year license extensions.
Yeah, well, two of the plants in particular in New England, Vermont and Yankee, beginning commercial operations, I believe, sometime around 1972, and then the Pilgrim nuclear power plant in Plymouth, also 1972. Now, Vermont Yankee in particular has had several problems in recent years. Can you remind us of what those were?
I'd say starting about 2007, a cooling tower just suddenly collapsed on the campus of Vermont Yankee, and it was not a danger in any way to the power plant's facilities, but a lot of people felt if just a cooling tower fell, what else was not being taken care of? Much more recently, during some state hearings, Entergy officials said, look, we don't have underground pipes that could potentially leak tritium, which is a sort of a weak radioactive water. And lo and behold, a few weeks later, found out, in fact, Vermont Yankee was, in fact, leaking tritium through the very underground pipes that Entergy officials indicated did not exist. That just didn't erode public trust. It seemed to sort of deflate it completely.
I've read that both the Pilgrim nuclear power plant and Vermont Yankee are of the same design that the Fukushima plant in Japan is.
It is. It's a design that's been criticized. It's a very early design, and what's criticized is the containment. It's called a Mark I containment, and it has, at least theoretically, some problems along the base of it that could lead to seepage in case of a major problem. The other problem that's been actually occurring in Japan is that the spent fuel rod pool, which once you finish with the fuel, in the United States we keep our spent fuel, which still is radioactive, in water. These spent fuel pools are basically in the attic, and there's been some criticism, especially in the last week, that that's not a good idea because if an earthquake shakes it, if the building becomes compromised, those pools could then drain and expose the rods, releasing quite significant radioactive material.
Well, Beth, let me ask you, the other thing that makes it really interesting is that it provides, I believe, about a third of the power for the state of Vermont. That's a huge amount. So if the plant were not to be relicensed, because it seems like that, as you're saying, it's so up in the air right now, what would the state do to, make up for that, the loss of 30% of its source of electricity?
Right. Well, I'm actually in the State House trying to figure that out right now in Montpelier. And what I'm hearing is that there's actually a glut of energy. I don't know whether it's hydro. They just signed a big contract with Hydro-Québec in Vermont. That may be part of it. But apparently state officials, including the governor's office, feels quite confident that there's enough energy there that Vermont Yankees no longer need it. Now, I should say, I think a lot of people don't agree with that, and a lot of people question that, but hopefully we'll get to the bottom of it.
And Beth, I guess I'm just wondering if we could step back a little for some context about the conversation or the conflict around nuclear power in New England. As you mentioned, President Obama has, become quite a champion of nuclear power, but also there's a long history of anti-nuclear power sentiment in the region. So just before the Japan disaster happened, what was the feeling surrounding nuclear energy in New England?
That's a really good question. It was really interesting. After Three Mile Island, there wasn't another nuclear reactor license for 30 years. But lately, there's been talk of a great nuclear renaissance in the U.S., and a lot of that has to do with climate change. Nuclear power plants don't emit greenhouse gases, and they've won over some prominent environmentalists to their cause that says, listen, if we're going to be in a carbon-free world, a relatively carbon-free world, nuclear's got to be part of the equation. So that's where we were. It was sort of troubled economically. The recession didn't help it, but a lot of people were pushing for it and believed in it because they felt it would help climate change. Now, given the renewed fears about radioactive material from these plants, it's anyone's guess where the U.S. debate will go.
And last question, Beth, you've reported today that you've spoken with members of Senator Bernie Sanders' office, and also that members of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission are actually scheduled to appear at a Senate hearing today. So does it seem to you, from what you've been hearing, that Vermont Yankee, at least, is at the end of the line?
It's not clear to me at all what is going to happen with Vermont Yankee. I would say among the 104 nuclear reactors operating that Vermont Yankee does seem to be right now sort of at the epicenter of this big debate about do we keep aging plants going, and in the wake of the Japan crisis, do we need to take a much, much deeper look at them before we give them 20-year extensions? And they're definitely caught in that gap. Whether or not Vermont Yankee will continue operating for 20 years, the NRC said yes. They did say yes. I don't know how you rescind that. But it's going to be a fight either way, and I think both sides are gearing up for a massive one.
Beth Daly, environment reporter for the Boston Globe, speaking to us from up in Vermont today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, listeners, what do you make of it? As you watch the disaster ratchet up in Japan, do you cast a worried eye over to Vermont Yankee or Pilgrim Nuclear? Or do you think the risks associated with nuclear power and an earthquake pale in comparison to the risk associated with fossil fuels and global warming? And I guess I'm also wondering, do you think this is the best time or the worst time to be rethinking New England's nuclear power future? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, we're joined now on the line from Washington, D.C. by Massachusetts Congressman Edward Markey. He is the ranking Democrat on the House Natural Resources Committee and a senior member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Congressman Markey, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
Also with us is Michael Golay. He is a professor at MIT of Nuclear Science and Engineering, and in the past he has also served on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Research Review Committee. Professor Golay, welcome to Radio Boston. I guess we'll get Professor Golay in just a second here. But Congressman,
I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you for your greeting.
Thank you for joining us. Congressman Markey, today you've been in attendance in a joint session of the House and Senate Natural Resources Committee. Secretary of Energy Stephen Chu testified there, reiterating his and President Obama's support for the $36 billion in requested appropriations to help provide loan guarantees for folks who want to build new nuclear power plants. So what did you hear from Secretary Chu and your response to nuclear power right now in America, and particularly in New England?
I honestly believe that the entity that we really have to listen to right now is Wall Street. Wall Street turned a deaf ear to the financial pleas of the American nuclear industry after Three Mile Island and after Chernobyl, so that there has not been a new nuclear power plant ordered successfully in the last 36 years in our country. And that is more a function of their inability to raise money in the private sector than for any other reason. I think what is happening now is that the domestic nuclear industry is on very shaky financial ground. Wall Street, I think, is going to have to take another look, because there's a risk premium that will be built into this issue. And I asked Secretary Chu today whether or not he was going to factor in a new risk premium for the use of American taxpayer money to guarantee loans for to the nuclear industry. He said that he was going to be adding in this new event to the equation, and if that happens, I think it's going to have a very negative impact in terms of the ability to raise the capital necessary over at least a decade-long period to complete the construction of new nuclear power plants and bring them to operation. It's a long period of time to have that amount of money at risk.
Congressman Markey, I guess I should be asking you the plain question. You don't want to see any new nuclear plants be built in the United States, is that correct?
I don't think that we should be financing new nuclear power plants in earthquake-prone parts of our country. As Beth Daly mentioned earlier, the Waxman-Markey bill, as it passed the House of Representatives 2 years ago, the climate bill, would have actually created a very favorable investment environment for nuclear power, because it was a non-greenhouse gas emitting source of electricity. And that gave a lot of hope to the nuclear industry, but the Republicans, Mitch McConnell and Jim Imhoff and others, killed the bill in the United States Senate. And so that was a great hope for the industry. I think going forward, it can really only survive if the American taxpayers give it a guarantee of financing. So there's a socialist kind of Chinese, French model that we would have to adopt, because the American model of pure capitalism will not work for domestic nuclear industry absent taxpayer guarantees.
Mm. Congressman, I saw you on CNN recently, and you basically said to them that you believe nuclear power may have met its maker in the marketplace over the weekend, as you're saying now, and that in the next 10 to 15 years, where, you know, we might have seen new nuclear plants come online, that instead, you know, solar and wind can fill the gap that nuclear would have filled. But I'll be honest, I find that a little hard to believe, because even right here in Massachusetts, it's been more than a decade and Cape Wind still isn't even online. They haven't sunk one caisson out there yet. So, I mean, it seems a little optimistic that solar and wind can be the sources of alternative green energy that you say we need with no nuclear power plants instead.
Yeah. And I think that's the big information gap that's out there that will have to be filled now. Because first, it isn't about protesters shutting down nuclear power. It's about investors who have been running away, Wall Street, not Main Street. should have to pay if something goes wrong, and Wall Street doesn't want to do it. In 2009, for example, there were 10,000 new megawatts of wind installed in the United States, 500 new megawatts of solar. Just to give you an idea, the total electrical generating capacity for New England to run all six states is 30,000 megawatts on a daily basis, of which we use about 24,000 megawatts, which is what Beth was referring to. There could be a surplus that, you know, could be used to make up any gap, and using Canada as well as an additional source. But just so I give you that scale, 30,000 megawatts of capacity in New England. So just in the last 2 years, there were about 15, 16,000 new megawatts of wind that were installed in the United States, another couple of thousand megawatts of solar, and about 1,000 megawatts of biomass and geothermal. And as this whole area ramps up, by the time we reach 2020, 2021, there'll be 125 to 150,000 megawatts of renewable energy that are going to come online, just so you can see what that means, comparing it to Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant, which is 1,000 megawatts, Vermont Yankee, which is smaller, but all of New England just needing 30,000 megawatts to provide the electrical generating capacity. So people don't understand that what they're doing is they're comparing, for example, to give you a comparison, if in 1990 people thought, people would project that there would be no new typewriters in the United States, no one would be using a typewriter 20 years later, and everyone would have a computer, that say, that can't be true. 95% of all, you know, typing is done on typewriters and only 5% on computers. But in 20 years, we moved to computers. Well, that's what's happening now with wind and solar and natural gas and other ways of generating electricity.
Congressman Markey, I'm sorry to interrupt here because I know that you've got to run for a vote here pretty soon. But before I let you go, I want to actually allow Professor Golay to give us a response to what he's heard so far in the conversation. Professor Golay, your response to what you're hearing from Congressman Markey.
Well, basically, at one level, I'm tempted to engage in what he's actually saying. And at another level, I'm thinking we should talk about things that are more important. But I'll take on what he's saying. What he's talking about is apples and oranges. The various megawatts are not fungible, in that nuclear megawatts provide much more energy than do wind megawatts, because the duty factors are so different. And more importantly, you can't count on the wind units to be operating when you want them to be. Now, in a mixed portfolio, I will suggest that there's space for both, but talking about them as if they are of the same species is very misleading. And I'm sure that the congressman doesn't wish to be misleading, but it's a problem when you get politicians discussing technologies.
Okay, well, so your point taken there, and you said that you think there are more important issues surrounding nuclear power for us to talk about. So, yeah, I please bring them to the table. What do you think is the heart of this conversation at the moment, given that everyone is looking at Vermont Yankee and at Pilgrim and at Seabrook and wondering, you know, does the news in Japan, the horrors in Japan, put those nuclear power plants, their future, you know, up in the air? And should they?
Okay. To me, the really important issue is climate change and how we're going to create a portfolio of technical approaches which will let us get off of fossil fuels, and I think many people share that goal. The part that tends to be missing in this discussion, and Congressman Markey hinted at it, is that the model that we have, the capitalist model, that says the way you change the portfolio is to change the technologies and let efficient technologies edge out those that are the incumbents right now. Basically, that model isn't going to work. The fossil fuels are so attractive, so cheap, so convenient that the renewables and nuclear and hydro basically are not in a good position to compete with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want a future that doesn't rely on fossil fuels, we basically have to focus not on technologies, but how we intervene in markets, and that means taxes, subsidies, various incentives, in order to get the results that we want for other reasons.
Professor Golay, stand by for just a moment. Congressman Markey does have to go take a vote and do the work of the people here. And before he goes, I just want to allow him to get a response, to put a response from that, because Congressman Markey, what Professor Golay seems to be asking is right in your wheelhouse as, you know, a ranking and important member of these committees in the House. Like, why not focus your efforts on changing policy and making markets more friendly to these other forms of energy, which I know you do support? Congressman Markey, are you still with us? Looks like we lost him, so he can go and make that vote. Professor Golay, I'm going to come back to you, but we've got a lot of people who want to join this conversation who are listeners. We are talking about the future of nuclear energy in New England. We put a question out on Facebook for folks who are following the crisis in Japan and wondering and if they're concerned about nuclear power here. And Richard Klein responds, yes, yes, 1,000 times yes. Anthony Deaver, on the other hand, wrote on Facebook, nope, not worried. It took an 8.9 earthquake and a tsunami to damage the plant in Japan. I don't see that happening in Plymouth. Let's take a call from Orleans. Dana's on the line. Welcome to Radio Boston, Dana.
Hi. I would just like to challenge the assumption that nuclear power doesn't add greenhouse gases to the climate and aggravate global climate change. No, nuclear power plants do not do that while they're operating, but what the greenwashers don't tell you, the nuclear greenwashers, is that the carbon cycle, the nuclear fuel cycle of mining and enrichment and milling and such is very carbon intensive. And as I understand it, the United States would need 200 more plants to, you know, in order to maintain our standard of energy. So I just wish that would be more out in the open, that the fuel cycle is very carbon intensive, according to Carl Grossman, writing in Extra Magazine, put out by Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and this was back in February 2008.
Dana, thanks so much for your call. Professor Michael Golay, your response to that?
This is a question that's been studied a lot, and I don't think there's any real disagreement that nuclear power contributions to greenhouse gases is much smaller than direct consumption of fossil fuels. It's not purely free of using fossil fuels, as the caller relates, but compared to direct use of fossil fuels, there's a big advantage. I don't really see what there is to discuss about that.
I wonder if I might ask you a brief question just actually about relative safety, because you've looked into this very deeply as a member of the NRC's Research and Review Committee, and you recently wrote for the New York Times Online that utilizing cost-benefit judgments, this is you writing, every nation with nuclear power has set the strongest earthquake that its nuclear plants must survive intact considerably below the level of the Japanese earthquake. While on one hand, Richter, an 8.9 or 9.0 level earthquake is an exceedingly rare event, on the other hand, it makes me wonder, you know, how low are the standards set, say, for the power plants here in New England? Does it make them more susceptible to a severe amount of damage with less shaking beneath them?
No, I would say not. Relative to the history in New England, the standards are pretty high. This is not a region that has experienced really strong earthquakes. The strongest one on record occurred in 1755 and had an energy release of about 1/1000th of that, this Japanese event.
And that was a Lisbon earthquake.
Well, it occurred in the same year, but it involved different geological structures.
I see. So you don't see the reason why I'm asking is today, as I was doing some research on this, I saw that the NRC itself, I believe, had updated some of its risk factors for earthquakes. I'm looking at some information that says the NRC risk estimates based on 2008 geological data, ranking the 104 reactors in the United States, and in terms of risk. And the Pilgrim plant in Plymouth, Massachusetts, has a risk of 1 in 14,000 of suffering core damage in the event of an earthquake. Its old estimate was 1 in 125,000. So even the NRC is saying there's some increased risk there.
That could be. I mean, you find changes in these estimates over time. sometimes they go up, sometimes they go down. And basically what happens is you improve your state of knowledge about this as you learn more or study more deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So a change like that is not necessarily such a surprise.
Let's get another call in here. Linda is calling from Pepperell. Welcome to Radio Boston, Linda.
Thank you for taking my call. I worked and did research for the President's Commission on Three Mile Island. And number one, I would never locate a nuclear power plant at the place where it was sited in Seabrook. All those tiny roads and those touristy places, people could not get out. And number two, when an evacuation order is given, they did not evacuate out 10 miles. They evacuated out 20 and 50 miles.
Mm.
So you have to be ready for that kind of panic.
Mm.
And I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry, Linda. No, go ahead.
My other point is that the accident or incident at Three Mile Island was human error.
Mm-hmm. Whereas in Japan, it's a natural disaster.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the other thing is that in the United States, we built our nuclear power plants based on the design of the nuclear power plants in submarines.
Mm-hmm. Linda, I'm sorry I have to cut you off there. We just got a minute left here. I want to get a comment from Bach, who's writing on our website, radioboston.org. Bach writes, perhaps 10,000 Americans die quietly each year because of fossil fuel power plants. Unless we want to live in a cold, dark world, the only way to really change this is nuclear power. Professor Michael Golay, that seems to be echoing your sentiments that the greatest damage, long-term damage here from the Japanese quake regarding nuclear power is the effect that you see it has on people's attitudes about nuclear power and climate change.
Well, I'm simply raising a factor which we should take into account when we decide what policies we want to adopt when we factor in the Japanese event, that it's easy to overreact to a severe and emotionally upsetting event like this earthquake with all its scary headlines. What I'm really trying to point out is that that kind of overreaction can have its own costs that we might really not want to pay.
Hmm. Professor Michael Golay, professor of nuclear science and engineering at MIT and former member of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Research and Review Committee, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
You can always comment more online, listeners. There were a lot of you. I'm sorry I couldn't get to you, but you can send your comments to us at radioboston.org. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. There's more after a break. This is Radio Boston.